Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this Palomar Technical Net. We're over 44 years now. We've gotten to the habit of sitting in front of our radios and chatting with each other and learning from each other and teaching each other and hopefully entertaining each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving meal. Didn't eat too much, but enough. Anyway, as per usual, let me drop for a second and I will tell you about the usual links. If you wish to contact me via email, you can do that. My email address for the Technical Net is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, if you want to contact Paul and ask him to take a look at a NASA or space-related story and comment, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. As always, every week I cut and paste interesting articles and put it on a link page at your convenience. If you're curious or insomnia is working double time, you can just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. That'll bring up my link page, and you can thumb through a couple of articles I found interesting. As always, we have a chat room available. It's been quiet lately, but you can access it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and you never know what will happen. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net. We leave it open the rest of the week so that people who don't have a radio can listen into the Glen Oaks repeater. You can access it by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. Also, I'd like to remind people every week that Mike, AC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limar Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of fellow hams who have either moved away from the area or unfortunately passed away and become silent keys. So that's the usual links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. We have a standard model technical net for tonight. We don't have any guest speakers. I'll give you a short rendition of what's happened in the AI world this week. If anyone wants to discuss it one way or the other, they're free to. If not, we will pass on to the main segment of questions, comments, and topics. I will ask people to hit that push to talk if they have a question or a comment or a subject to discuss. Hopefully amateur radio related. If not, then at least science and technology. I'll ask them to check in under those circumstances, give us your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio oriented or if it's science and technology oriented, and we'll write your names all down and try to squeeze you all in until the end of that segment, which should come at approximately 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report, and that should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return at that time to tie a bow and everything and wish you well for the coming week. That's our plans. If the shack continues to work the way it's supposed to and the repeater continues to work the way it's supposed to and I don't get kicked off of All Star too many times, the average number tends to be two. Sometimes it comes towards the end of the net, which is better than the beginning or the middle. So those are the plans. So let me drop, and I'll come back in a second and tell you a couple of interesting things that I've read about AI lately. Okay, no. Anthropic has announced its latest iteration. Anthropic is the creator of the Claude Opus AI, and they announced 4.5. They say one of the interesting things they say is that it has a AI browser agent, so it's going to interface with your Chrome browser and maybe be able to book that dinner that you really want AI to book for you. Time will tell. Amazon invested, or at least announced the intent to invest $50 billion in infrastructure for AI. OpenAI is hinting at some fancy new gadget that Sam Altman and Johnny Ives, the ex-designer for Apple, have been working on. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that is. I hope it isn't another segue. So that's about it. New York City Council apparently created a dedicated office for AI oversight to monitor AI systems by city agencies, so that should be interesting. It looks like another week in the world of AI. If anyone has any questions or comments before we move on to the main segment, please hit that push to talk.
I really think that AI can't always be as reliable because I've been hearing a lot of kind of scary things. Take YouTube, for example, Roy. It's the automation for, like, things that go on with, like, your account and, like penalties that people get hit with. People are now just getting bombed without warning and losing all of their history, all their accounts and everything. And when you try to appeal, it just gets rejected immediately. 82OGB.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been problems with the way that a lot of companies handle computer-related things is to give it to a computer to handle, and usually that's not as good as a human being, especially a trained human being. So I think that problem is going to continue forever and ever and ever. I mean, there's many reasons why artificial intelligence fails. It's sort of designed to leave you happy, so sometimes it'll even lie to you if that means you'll be happy. Unfortunately, I think that's the cause for some of this AI psychosis, where troubled young people who are lonely and don't have enough friends, and they have this strange either friend relationship with AI agents, or they use them as a synthetic psychologist. And because of the nature of the AI, that it takes your side, no matter what flaky idea you might have, it'll take your side against everyone. And it's led to a few people actually going psychotic and killing relatives because the AI tells these people that they're right about everything and their relatives are all wrong, and they're doing it for suspicious reasons, and they kind of breed paranoia. Another reason that we've talked about repeatedly is generative artificial intelligence has this enormous flaw that's called hallucinating. If you ask an AI, a generative AI, to answer a question that it doesn't have in its parameters, rather than tell you it doesn't know and make you sad, it will make something up to make you happy. So those are the big problems. Not to mention the trillions of dollars that are being invested in chips and server farms and electrical generators and, you know, all the other things going on in the economy. 10 AI-based companies just passing a stack of money around and around and around, and everyone considering it a multiple of profits and pumping up stocks and such. So it's an interesting topic. It's going to have an effect on us, whether for the good or for the bad. So I like to kind of keep people abreast in the same way that I did when we were coming on to our COVID epidemic, and most people didn't quite know what was going on. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth on AI. Anyone with any other comments, questions, or what have you before we go to the main segment?
I really think that as time goes on, more channels are just going to get demonetized and even deleted because of this AI. Just this marking stuff when it doesn't even go against the rules. It's so horrible. These people make money off of this stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the big problems I have seen, especially in YouTube, is what is generally termed AI swap. There are more than a few agents out there, artificial intelligent agents, where you plug in a
like either the repeater is just not playing nicely again, or it's probably just me.
Well, what can I tell you? I got kicked off of All-Star, and it's only 8:12, so doesn't bode well, but we'll see how that works. But anyway, what I was trying to tell you, Craig, is that one of the big problems as I see it right now, and, there'll be more developing as time goes on, is YouTube is filled with slop AI, generic history lessons, with random images that don't really have much to do with the story that they're telling. Some of these channels are pumping out 5-10 of these videos a day, which unless you have $1 million production facility, the only way you could do it is with AI swap.
YouTube's been sued too many times, especially by Viacom many years back, and that's why they want the whole thing to be automated. Otherwise, they'll get heat from companies, especially when it comes to copyright and trademark issues. And if you look at YouTube and Viacom's history, that's the reason why they wanted all the copyright stuff to be automated. And now they want the whole thing to be automated. Well, eventually, more channels are going to get wiped one by one unless there's more human reviews. Because AI is not always right, unfortunately. People appeal these decisions on why they were terminated only for the AI to say, nope, you're staying locked up. Sorry.
AC2GS. Yeah, I think the primary reason is economics. All these people are looking to maximize their profit margin. And human beings tend to be more expensive than AI agents. So big companies are going to keep kind of forcing AI on us. Microsoft, of course, has Copilot that they're promoting endlessly, and a lot of other companies. I'm looking for the eventual day that cereal boxes have AI written on their cover. It's just the nature of things. Capitalism looks to maximize profits for their owners. And they're going to keep trying to do it unless or until people just stop responding to them and forcing them to spend a little bit more money on human beings, if that's at all possible.
I really think that more humans should be out there than AI, because the final decision if something should remain up or terminated would be a human, since that's how it originally should have been many years ago. Copyright is one thing, but for, like, everything else, basically just to go after your account when you have, like, no strikes or anything and just wipe everything up, when you've had, like, tens of millions of followers and been making a lot of money, that's just something that is literally unfair to everybody. It's only going to get worse. Eventually, it's going to be like, oh, all our representatives are currently assisting other callers. There are no representatives. Basically, it's just all going to be AI. In fact, they'll say they'll get back to you in a few business days, and then they'll just ghost you completely and hope that you forgot about it.
Again, unfortunately, companies are always looking at the bottom line, and if they want to maximize their profits, in their opinions, the more they go into computer artificial intelligence and less hiring human beings who, want a fair wage and wants vacation time and wants to have a little free time to go to the bathroom, AIs don't have to go to the bathroom, so it's going to be a give and take, a push and shove, and It'll be interesting to see what it does in the end. Unfortunately, if the AI revolution actually succeeds in the hype, it kind of leaves most people unemployed, which is dangerous. Because unemployed people, unless you pay them off, and I don't think there's enough money for that, are going to get upset and angry. And they're not going to kind of let the billionaires, and that soon it will be trillionaires, do that to them. People in desperate shape do desperate things. I don't want to, I don't want to be pessimistic, but I don't know. It's going to be weird. Anyway, any other comments or questions before we move on? Yeah, I think it was Paul, and then after Paul, John.
Okay. Good evening. The dose of AI. One of these days that'll get fixed, I guess, for you, Roy. But yeah, my question or comment is, I got an update on my phone. You know, I have an Android Samsung phone. So maybe you won't know about this. I don't think you have that, Roy. But the message that comes up, you know, after it goes through the update, is that now Gemini is to access Gemini. All you have to do is push the side button to bring it up. You can talk to it. Well, on the phone, there's only two buttons. You know, there's the up and down. There's the up and down button for volume, and of course, then there's the other button for turning it on or off. On or off. So neither one of those would be appropriate. So somebody's got to come out with better directions, I guess. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, well, that's not surprising, since Android is a production of Google, and Gemini is a production of Google. And as I said before, everyone's trying to promote their AI to make sense of the trillions of dollars that they're investing in it. You might want to try Googling it. The problem is, especially with Android, is there's so many different third-party models of cell phones that operate on Android that how each particular model interacts is somewhat problematic. It might be a setting, within the Android software that you can set what will activate Gemini. Probably Googling it would be the best approach. Google Gemini summoning button or control button and the model of the cell phone that you have, and if you give it a little bit of time to percolate, it'll probably come up with some useful ideas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good idea. I'll do that. I just think it's weird, you know. I mean, millions of phones are being upgraded, and they can't get it. The one thing that they were trying to get across correct. That's not a good sign. Yeah. Okay, Roy. We'll turn it back to you, and have a good night. We'll be standing by.
Thank you. This is what Google does. Google is full of software engineers who think of neato ideas and figures out how to get them implemented without problems after the fact. Apple's a lot more interested in design, so if the software guys come up with something, they spend probably twice as much time in the design sector of putting it in a nice place and making it aesthetically pleasing. So it's Google doing what Google tends to do. In the end, it'll probably iron itself out. But again, whereas Apple is designing an operating system for maybe 15 models at most. After a cell phone model ages, the The Apple application will not upgrade the operating system. It sticks at the previous one. Whereas Android, geez, I've lost count how many different models are out there with different feature sets. So it's probably significantly harder for Google to maintain an all-in-one software update that things don't break under those circumstances. I wish you luck. I see the Gemini button on my browser because I use Google Chrome, and they've shoved it up there. Same way, if I open up something from Microsoft, I see Copilot. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the AI wars turn out. It'll be probably much bloodier than the streaming wars that, you know, big media companies have lost billions and billions of dollars. Anyone with... John, SHO, you're next.
Yeah, I guess a new subject would be that... are you sure you don't have the force button up, down, power, and then what they were calling the Bixby button may now be called the Gemini button? I'm not sure all models have it, but Samsung surely do. There's four buttons on the Samsung: up, down, power, and the Bixby button. again, I don't know all the models. Let's see what comes through here. And your comment on people kind of rising up in defiance of the AI thing, it was only really within the last couple of years that I finally, I shouldn't say finally, that I read or watched something that really shed light on what the term Luddite really means about the hand textile people that really hated the poor quality and losing their jobs. They were losing their jobs to poor quality, sewing machines, I guess is the right way to look at it. It kind of made me think of that story. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of parallels. One of the small little details that sometimes gets lost that I really enjoy rolling around in my brain is, you know, the Luddite group were named after a guy called Ludd, except that there was no guy called Ludd. He was a make-believe person. Basically, they just made up a guy to be kind of the spiritual leader of their group. I think it would be nice if more somewhat crazy groups picked imaginary people instead of real people. I think imaginary people are less destructive, all things being equal, than real leaders.
Well, you may get your wish. There's imaginary people everywhere right now. AC2, GF, KC2, SHO.
Yeah, I mean, there are, but they're much vaguer, thankfully, and they haven't coalesced to a massive movement that was instrumental in the industrial age. It's push comes to shove. You can't have an economy that 1% of the population has 50% of the wealth and get away with it for beyond a certain point. It tends to stress your society. And, recently we've experienced episodes where there were food problems, getting food. And, there's an old saying, I forget the exact detail, but, the difference between a rational democracy and insane revolutionary rabble is a week or two of not having food supplies. So I don't know. I wish I was could be more optimistic about the short term future. Hopefully, the long term future will solve these problems. But in the short term, I see a lot of chaos that's going to come on. But we'll see. Get a big a container of popcorn, put your feet up, and watch the show, I guess.
Well, that might be a real good segue. Have you seen the news about that feature that they implemented onto X, formerly known as Twitter, where you can see where the origin of the account is. And they're finding that a ton of accounts that have, you know, a high number of, I don't know what you want to call them, subscribers or whatever, that are highly or on the political side, people are flocking to some of, or have been at least, maybe they won't be any longer, flocking to those accounts because of things like, I'm losing the term for confirmation bias. That's what I want. That's probably one of the reasons. You see an account, you see some confirmation bias, you click like or friend or whatever the case is, and it's some robot, you know, Southeast Asia. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's well known that a lot of Twitter slash X's individuals are bots. Matter of fact, Elon actually tried to cancel the deal, claiming that there were many more bots than he was told about. So he was buying a fake business, but the judge impelled him to take this X and do with it as he will, unfortunately. My understanding is they discontinued that feature. They might have even deleted a lot of the examples. And also, some of the examples might be erroneous. There was an example where I think the State Department looked as though it was coming through Israel. I tend not to think that the Israelis are operating our government website. You never know. So I don't know exactly how true that its ability to properly locate people. Also, I don't know if it's able to deal with VPNs. VPNs are very popular. I use them myself to be able to do things that Echolink would rather I not do. But if I do it this way, they don't mind. Not quite sure what to make of that. It makes for a very amusing story, as most things that come out of Twitter and X. But I think that was just a flash. I don't think they're going to maintain that feature because it's a little bit too embarrassing for them.
Yeah, Roy, the news I heard claimed that they turned it off, but there was so much backlash that they turned it back on. This is just one news source, of course. I certainly don't have my finger on the pulse, and I have not looked at that feature myself. But yeah, you brought up my next point, which was going to be that how does it deal with VPNs? That's a very complicated thing for something like that to sort out, and if the VPN... if the source of the VPN could really be sorted out, then what's the point of the VPN, right? That's why a lot of people run it. All right, just another fun one for the evening. I'll let you get on with it, Roy. We'll be here listening and trying to help my son with his science project here. Hopefully we can figure this up this evening. AC2, GFKC2,
okay, very good. Yeah, VPNs are not the panacea that VPN companies promoting them on YouTube and other places present. It gives you privacy. It blocks you entirely. It doesn't block you entirely, far, far from it. People who have played around with torrents using VPNs have discovered that their information kind of bleeds through the VPN. And there are other limitations of VPN. So it serves a purpose, but not it's not a Swiss Army knife. It doesn't serve every purpose, unfortunately, although it would be nice if it did. As far as I'm aware of the way that VPN operates, there is a way to detect if you are pinging a VPN IP address, because They have their own number of IP addresses, and they're listed, and they're in databases, so you can buy the database, and if it comes up with the IP address that's being used by a VPN provider, you could make it so that it says this is a VPN. It won't tell you the original country, most likely, but if you have a vendor that doesn't want people to use VPNs because they're regional, recognizing that if you're operating a VPN allows them to block you, which is what most of the vendors are mostly interested in. But, you know, if you just want to obscure your IP address for different applications that are going to present an affidavit to your ISP and such, it's pretty good, but it's not perfect. Anyway, any other comments before we move on to the main segment? Please hit that push to talk.
WS2N for an update on the Gemini problem.
Sure, Paul.
Did what you said. And sure enough, AI actually comes up with the answer. There is no extra button on the Samsung one that I have. What they tell you is that now the power button has now become the Gemini button. You know, you push and hold that, and Gemini will pop up. And then later on, you know, in the wording from AI, it says now to shut the unit off, you now have to you have to push that same button and hold it, but you have to at the same time push the volume button down. Hold it at the same time, and then the unit will shut off. This is going to drive a lot of people crazy. Wow. Anyway, I guess they'll figure it out shortly, you know, as time goes on. But, one thing after the other. I think it's a terrible idea. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, well, at least they don't require you to pat your head and rub your tummy at the same time of holding on to the power button. Yeah, the problem is that there are some people in design that know that users prefer as few controls as possible for a sleek appearance, and yet they want to do so many different things that how do you access them? I mean, you see that in our modern-day transceivers where they hide endless menus behind a few simple buttons, and you can't remember how the hell to get to the sub menu. So it's one of the problems of modern time, where everything's smaller and simpler. Well, superficially simpler. And eventually, they'll probably just have Gemini listen to you, and you'll just if you actually voice your problem or your question, it'll just wake up and answer you. So, and most people will hate it, and some people, especially engineers, will love it.
Okay. Anyway, there's something new every day. There you go. Back to you, Roy. Okay.
Yes, indeed. I mean, that's the thing that I kind of like about this time. There's a lot of bad things, but if you sleep late, you miss a discovery or the invention of some new toy device that might be very instrumental or might not. You know, when they first invented and announced the Segway, there was a lot of hype connected to the Segway. You know, then it just basically nothing went right. And eventually, the guy that bought the company, I think he fell off his Segway and killed himself. So I think that was a very weirdly, sadly appropriate end to the Segway. But you never know how these things will turn out. Anyway, I am AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. We're open for business as far as our main segment is concerned, our questions and comments and topics. Of course, that can, if you wish, include artificial intelligence or robotics or any kind of science and technology. So, once again, I will ask people if they have a question or a comment or a topic for tonight. To hit that push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or just science and technology related, and we'll try to get everyone on the list. We'll see how things go. Let the games begin.
WP2 Alpha Hotel Kilo.
Chat recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight?
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Sam recognized. Anyone else?
Kilo Echo 2, Charlie Uniform Romeo.
Kilo Echo 2, Alpha Juliet Oscar.
Okay, anyone else? Kilo Echo 2, C-U-R. What's your first name, sir?
I go by George. It's Arthur on QRZ, but it's George. I go by George.
Okay, very good, George. AJO, what's your first name?
First person on Jose.
Okay, very good, Jose. Anyone else want to go on the list? Please hit that push to talk and ID. Hopefully, as time goes on, there'll be a few more. Chet, what can I do for you tonight?
All right. Hello, everybody. Chet, WB2, American Ham Kilowatt, Floral Park, New York. I'm sure this subject has come up before. I recall listening maybe a year ago or something. It has to do with picking up interfering noises, static, power line noise, fluorescent light noise, now even LED noise. If I have at the top of my stairway, I have a LED fixture, and it actually puts out an S9 noise on my HF radio. So if I want to operate HF, I got to turn off, make sure the hallway light is off. Recently, it was so bedeviling, I was getting an S9 noise. I'm trying to work AM. AM really picks up the noise. It was annoying me so much that I stayed up one night to try to find a noise source in the neighborhood. Let me let it drop. All right, so I really stayed up late. The first time I ever did this, and I drove around the neighborhood, there was an S9 noise on AM, making it almost impossible for me on 40 meters. So drove around, and I used the car radio, listening to the AM band, and tried to pick a frequency between the local broadcast stations. And I was amazed as I drove around my neighborhood to pick up noise emissions from houses that they drove by. It was incredible the amount of emissions coming from my neighbors around the neighborhood. But I found a guy that lit up his house like a Times Square building, and he had one heck of a display. And as I drove, I didn't know where this noise source that was coming from in my particular situation here, but he was really lit up. So as I drove by his house, it was one heck of a racket on my car radio, really, really bad. Let me let it drop again. So then I drove around the neighborhood further, 5 blocks away, and I found out 3 or 4 really bad noise sources in the neighborhood, but not as bad as this particular guy. He was only a block and a half, 2 blocks away. And I just figured that this has got to be the source of my noise coming in on my HF radio. So I'm home. I listen, and then I got home. I started listening again, and it was terrible. I couldn't operate my radio. I like AM, and so I went by his house and waited and waited and waited to see what time his lights go off, and they didn't go off. So I went home to just sit by the radio. At 3:30 in the morning, all of a sudden the noise went away, and I said, let me take a chance and go around the corner and see if this guy has his lights on. And unbelievably, half his lights were off, gone, and the noise source went away. Let me let it drop again. So obviously, for my particular noise situation, this was the worst noise source of all for me. And I was killing my enjoyment of amateur radio operation on AM on 40 meters. So, I don't know what happened. Maybe he had, maybe he blew a fuse on his lights. It lit up like Times Square. And his other, half of the lights were still on, but they weren't causing any noise. But the previous, you know, with all the extra lights on, it was taking out my signals on the HF band. So, any rate, I was going to knock on the guy's door, but I never got around to it. A week later, I saw him putting up Christmas lights in front of his house, more lights and balls and stuff, and I happened to meet him for the first time. I told him that I am the radio operator and his lighting system is causing me some problems. Well, that didn't work out too well. He really got ugly and called me all kinds of names and stuff. What does one do? Does anybody have any ideas how to diplomatically talk to people about noise sources coming out of their houses? Is there anybody at the electric company we can call? Maybe blame it on power line noise, which it isn't. And maybe they would say, well, it's not my pole transformer across the street from this person. It's that particular person is emitting all the noise. Does anybody know anybody at the power company that can help a ham to diplomatically reach the homeowner? WB2HK.
Okay, Chet, that's an interesting question. We in the old days, there was a guy, Long Island Power, who was kind of an ombudsman between the utility company and hams. But somewhat, well, when it came to problems with their transformers, it kind of speeded up the process of having someone evaluate it and fix it if it was their fault. I seriously doubt that utility companies are going to interact with people to tell them that they're producing radio frequency noise. Theoretically, if we had an FCC that did what it was supposed to do, that might be something to think of. But I think if you tried that, we'd all be, you know, 200 years old by the time the FCC even responded. So, unfortunately, other than finding a out-of-work used car salesman with the gift of gab to kind of smooth talk and, you know, maybe give him a bottle of scotch or something for Christmas, I don't know how you cajole people. Most people are ignorant of amateur radios and indifferent to them when you educate them. So I'm not that terribly surprised, especially, you know, neighbors are not known to be the most cheerful, friendly people here in the metro area. So if anyone has any kind of better idea than I just gave, Chet, feel free. Hit that push to talk.
Oh, WB2HK, that's what I figured. We're in a bad spot here, really bad spot. More and more noise sources with the, you know, the war warts and so on, noises and so on, and it's going to get worse. So at least maybe this guy after Christmas time, well, into January, maybe he'll take some of his lights down and I'll have less noise. But he really got ugly. He called me all kinds of names. I couldn't believe this. He called me all kinds of different horrible names. I tell you, at one point, it got so bad, I was trying to be a nice guy and try to, talk to him about point out that he had so many lights. Maybe it's just a bad string of lights or something. And maybe we could locate that particular string and take it out of the circuit. Anyway, it got very, very ugly at the sidewalk. I didn't want to go on his past the sidewalk if I met this guy, and I felt that he would be calling the police and saying I'm trespassing on his property. Even if I rang his bell, I didn't ring his bell. I happened to just find him in the yard, the front yard of his house. So I'm glad I didn't go on his property. I'd be in jail or something, or be arrested for trespass. Oh, well. Yeah, so I don't know what to do except give up AM. It's bad enough. I still pick it up on sideband, but the bandwidth on my radio is narrower, and it cuts out some of the noise. But, oh, well, it's a rough problem. Okay, thanks, Roy. Have a good one. I just want to vent my aggravation over the air. And I know that there's no help for us ham operators to get a spectrum that is free of interference. I know, sounds like I'm naive, but I'm not. I just vented. I feel better. Not really. All right, Roy, over to you.
Okay, I hope you feel a little bit lighter. I'll throw this one out, but I don't think it's particularly effective. Most likely, he's a big home lighting system. It's kind of developed a renaissance lately. It's a lot of Chinese companies have very inexpensive LEDs and pulse width modulated control, which is probably generating all that radio wave crap. If you kind of know what type of setup he's interested in, and you kind of gift him a higher quality Chinese version that has better filtering, you might interest him in swapping it. But then, it's a gamble. He could kind of throw it at you, or he could take it and tell you whatever. That's not allowed to be said by the FCC, and you might have just thrown more good money after bad. But that's the only thing I can get popped into my head.
VDH with a comment?
Yes, John.
I was wondering if the possibility maybe he could orient his antenna to give a null in that direction. The person he's talking about might be so close it might not make too much difference, but orienting his antenna so that it nulls in the direction of the interfering house.
Okay, Chet, is that possible? I would think not. I think Chet mentioned it's a block away. I don't think you could really null out a signal that's a block away.
WB2HK. Well, I had some experience with that many years ago on 160 meters. It's a transmit and receive antenna. So I once built a loop for 160. It was designed by Lou McCoy, W1 something something other, on the ARRL antenna book that he produced, Lou McCoy. And he designed such a simple antenna for 160, receiving antenna, and might have an application here. On 160, this antenna was 5 foot square, and it picked up 160 signals beautifully. Didn't really even matter if you had the antenna inside, if you had it outside, it didn't care, high above ground. And it was a tremendously beautiful efficient 160 receiving antenna. And maybe if I like 40 meters, maybe I could build an antenna, experiment building an antenna just for reception of, that might be it, for 40 meter signals. But what this antenna did was, it was amazing. It was omnidirectional. You could turn it around by hand, you know, it was only 5 foot square. And it was a point where if you rotated it, the last 5 degrees of the 360 degrees, it had a notch, had a high notch. That I remember listening to a station on 160. Let me let it drop. And they were coming in S9. And I was tested in experimentation. I turned this antenna. And I could notch out, believe it or not, I could notch out the person coming in S9. Completely gone. Like he wasn't even there. It was just like 5 degrees of its 360 degree rotation of the antenna around. Perhaps I could build an antenna for 40 meters and provide a switching system so that I can get, I could point it, I can receive 40 meters, let's say, for argument's sake, and it would be receiving as well as I did on 160, and then point it to where I could notch him out in his direction, which is 2 blocks away, because I did have some luck doing that on 160, because there were some noise sources as well on 160 that you could notch out. All right, thanks very much. That's a good idea. Maybe I'll just have to do something like that and build a new antenna. WB2HK.
Okay, very good. I wish you good luck, and please come back and tell us how things worked out. I think Lou McCoy was W1ICP, if memory holds. Also, it sounds like that antenna has a cardioid pattern, you know, like a microphone's cardioid pattern.
It was omnidirectional, completely omnidirectional, except for one little... maybe 5 degrees of a circle where it had an extreme notch. And the interesting thing, it was only a single wire going around 5 foot square. They called it a magnetic receiving loop antenna. I still got the design in my files here, so maybe I could scale it down to 40 meters.
Okay, very good, Chet. Good luck. Sam, AE2YG, what can I do you for tonight?
Good evening, Roy, and happy Thanksgiving. I would like to know what you would recommend to get on 80 meters in Brownstone, Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. Let's discuss limitations. You can't really put up anything in front of your Brownstone. I assume you don't have a lot of surface area for the rear of your brownstone. So I would think that whatever has to be put up has to be put up on your roof. So what's the measurements of your roof's area?
It's just 20, say 20 by 40, something like that, 20 by 40 or 20 by 50.
Okay, I mean, that's very common for Brooklyn. My roof is 20 by 50, but I'm able to kind of use the space in my backyard to provide an extra 20, 25 feet. Do you have any backyard space there?
Yes, a full backyard, just a 20 by 100 lot.
Oh, okay, so you basically have the same type of lot that I have, which makes a lot of sense. I tell you what I used to do for 80 meters. It wasn't a perfect solution, but I put up a fan dipole that had a loading coil. The DQ was rather high. You can adjust the length of the fan dipole to be optimal at CW side or the phone side, but you probably end up needing to use an antenna tuner, an antenna tuner, in order to tune it, past the point that you've decided to make the mechanical resident. So I'm a big fan of fan dipoles. I mean, there are other options you have. The problem is that 80 meters is kind of long for your property, and you're probably going to have to do something that mechanically shortens it, and you'll have to lengthen it electronically, which will give you the same higher Q and lower bandwidth without correction from an antenna tuner.
Take some notes. Question, how would a vertical work? Would that get too high up and be a threat with lightning and all that, or would a vertical have some potential?
Well, it depends on the vertical. The standard, quarter wave verticals will be a problem as far as radials. You'll find that the radials to be kind of theoretically optimal one quarter wavelength is gonna be far off of your roof and moving into your neighbors and all kinds of things. There are weird little and vertical antennas that have all kinds of ways of dealing with less radial wires, which is probably something you might want to look into. Anyone out there have any good advice for Sam of what would be a good 80-meter antenna for his 50 by 20-foot roof?
BB2BXL.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, a couple of comments. I operated an 18AVTWB high gain vertical in my backyard in Canarsie for many years with two ground rods, no radials. That worked reasonably well on 40 meters. 80 meters had a problem because the vertical had a high Q top hat and did not seem to give me much of a signal there. But I've read on a news group many years ago that the physics of it is that a ground-mounted vertical will work well below 30-meter band, below 10 megahertz. And my experience was that my ground-mounted vertical with ground rods did not function well at all on 20 meters and above. Be that as it may, another suggestion I've heard, and I wanted to try in Brooklyn, but my dad didn't want to ask the landlord to let me run short radials all over the backyard. Well, there were two problems. First of all, the vertical was stuck in the corner of his garden, so it couldn't, any radio system would have been asymmetrical. But one suggestion I've heard, if you don't have enough room for full-size radios, is to run a lot of short radios, which at HF, and correct me if I'm wrong, would have the same effect as having a ground plane, just a plain, metal plate under the antenna. So that might be another way to, that might be a way to do it. If somebody's tried that or has seen that in the books, can let us know, I suppose. Those are the two suggestions I have for a vertical right there. And the short radio scheme would probably work actually much better on the roof if you can elevate them than it would on the ground now that I think about it. Anyway, back connect controlled, BB2BX up.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about ground-mounted verticals. Not only are you looking for radials to offer a kind of synthetic matching element But you're also trying to shield from Earth's coupling. And I think if you don't have proper length radios, you'll have a lot more ground coupling, and a lot more power will just kind of get soaked into the Earth ground and not be radiating any place. So it's, I think it's, you know, if